beware and prepare for something spine tingling, something horrifying, pure terror to your eardrums. This is Epic Film Guy's B-Sides.
Let me put it into the old computer.
No, Justin, I'm serious.
Hey, the computer don't lie. Let's see here. Ooh.
What?
It says? Well, it says you're a dead fuck.
What? A dead fuck?
You know, a lousy lay? Like, you know, a limp dick.
Oh, don't hold back on me, Doc. Give it to me straight.
I did not say it. The computer did.
Yeah, well, there is no computer.
Aha! And there is no Betty, either.
And I'm a dead fuck.
Like I said, the computer don't lie.
God, I'm horny.
And welcome, ghouls, ghosts, slashers, and all you crazy maniacs out there to another edition of Epic Film Guy's B-Sides. I am your host, Epic Film Guy Justin.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Brian.
Also known as the god of podcasting, Loy Sauce, aka Loy Choss, A1 motherfucking steak sauce in this bitch. Welcome, everyone. It's been a while since we've had an Epic Film Guys B-Sides episode that hit your way. You guys made this happen. We put this out to you guys, the fans. We love when we do this and you guys respond so well. Brian, what did we do?
Well, we put out a poll of all of the films in the Friday the 13th franchise to do a special retrospective episode for the upcoming Friday the 13th. And so, since we had already done Jason Lives on B-Sides previously, we nixed that one, but we took it up to a vote, and the result was pretty overwhelmingly the final chapter.
Part 4. I saw it coming, man. I mean, to be fair, when we did our first poll, when we did our first Friday the 13th B-side, it was definitely Jason Lives, but right up hot on its heels was the final chapter, and for good reason, because it is, in my opinion, the best of the franchise. I would say Jason Lives for me is probably only second to it, so they're right up there for me. But those of you listening right now, if you get a chance to listen to this on Friday the 13th and you're listening right now and it's early in the day, Brian, something is happening tonight on Friday the 13th at Alamo Drafthouse, DC area, and One Loudon. Tell our listeners what's going on, dude. This is a really big deal.
We are showing Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives, at 10 p.m. at Alamo Drafthouse Cinema. So for those of you who are listening who happen to live in the Washington, D.C. metro area, feel free to come on down, and it's going to be a fun night.
All you horror hounds out in Northern Virginia, get your ass out to Alamo Drafthouse DC area. I'll be there in person introducing the film with Aloy Sauce, and I'll be having a great time, man. I may even be giving something away. Get boozed up, enjoy yourself on Friday the 13th with Jason Voorhees and the gang. It's gonna be a blast. But yes, thanks again, guys, for responding to our poll. We love when you guys do so well. And again, like Brian said, the final chapter won in spades. I don't even remember what came in third, but we were kind of hoping for Jason X or Jason Goes to Hell or A New Beginning, one of the lesser liked films of the franchise, so we could kind of maybe dig a little bit deeper into why people hate it so much. But if you had your say, Brian, if you could have just picked one out of all of them to talk about tonight, which one would it have been on your plate?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Well, it doesn't really matter because we're not talking about it anyway.
Oh, well, no tasty morsel for me. I guess I'll have to hold out until next time and see what you guys pick. But yes, it is Friday the 13th, the final chapter. And spoiler alert, this film is in my top 5 slashers of all time. If you guys want to listen to an episode where I talk about that, we actually did it back in the fall of 2017. I did it with Fear from Fearcast. We counted down our top 10 slasher films ever. And yep, the final chapter made the top 3. So there it is, baby. We're going to be talking about it tonight. And right off the bat here, okay? We know what this franchise is all about. We love this franchise. I'm a huge Friday the 13th fan. And Lois, I guess I could speak for you as well when I say that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's one of the best and most beloved franchises in horror history. And the final chapter is no exception. Dude, Tom Savini's back. You have Joseph Zito in the director's chair, who also directed a good slasher prior to that, known as The Prowler, Rosemary's Killer. And it's got the most brutal kills and mean-spirited vibe throughout, and I feel like out of the first four movies. Would you agree on that?
Definitely.
So, the final chapter, for those of you uninitiated, I feel bad for you, first off. it's after being mortally wounded and taken to the morgue, murderer, slasher icon Jason Voorhees spontaneously revives, of course, and embarks on a killing spree as he makes his way back to his home at Camp Crystal Lake. So this movie actually takes place directly after part three ends. It's literally like seconds after it ends, kind of in a way, because part three ends really strangely, but it does start right after part three ends. So it is a direct sequel and it picks up right where it left off and hijinks ensue. We have Jason Voorhees being taken to the morgue and we see one of those awesome slasher cliches. And I don't know where it started. Someone let me know where it started. But one of my favorite things in movies like this is where we see a dead body at the morgue and whoever's managing the morgue is eating at the same time as he's bringing in dead bodies. And we have the character of Axel. Okay. You all know who this dude is. He's amazing. And he shows up in Police Academy way later on down the line in the 80s. He puts his sandwich on top of Jason's body and
He's also a disgusting pervert.
Well, he is, but that's why we like him, isn't it?
Sure.
I mean,
well, we know he's going to get it in the most gruesome fashion possible. But yeah, for me, like even before we get to the morgue, there's some great stuff. First of all, we return to the original shooting location of part three, so it's continuity picking up right where the third one left off. We get a great montage as well of all of the money shots of Friday the 13th films prior.
That's right.
So right off the bat, it's like this is the culmination of a series. This was meant to be at the time the final chapter.
Yeah. So to see, they say that, but Joseph Zito came out on record and said they gave him carte blanche to do the film that way, but he knew deep down the way talking to him, all the suits in the room were like, you know, kill him, but don't kill him, kill him. And that was always the saying with these movies.
Right, right. Well, you had to leave the door creaked open just a little bit just to ensure that maybe one day down the line they'll do a sequel and then lo and behold. But yeah, so it feels like the culmination. We're getting all these great clips and it gets you hyped up. It gets you amped up. And then cut to the title screen, Friday the 13th plastered over the iconic mask. And then all of a sudden the subtitle, the final chapter appears and the mask explodes. The title explodes.
And it's got that old school retro explosion sound effect.
It's the most epic thing I've ever seen in my life. And then the credits start, Harry Manfredini's music. Just, I get chills just thinking about it. And the title screen, it's completely black, white titles, but the way they appear on screen, it's like you get a title at the upper left-hand corner and then, you know, the lower right-hand corner. And so, like, your eyes are constantly moving and darting around, and that kind of sets you up for the suspense to come, just from the title sequence alone, which is pretty incredible. But then, of course, we do get to the morgue, and the coroner, Axel, he's a horn dog. He's watching the aerobicized tape, and he's getting frisky with his lady friend.
Yeah, he's definitely totally in mode to get laid. He wants to know what she's doing later on. He likes to bang chicks while watching aerobics videos around dead bodies. I mean, what's cooler than that, dude? Like, as a horror fan, you're looking at this guy, most people would think he's slime. And I'm like, dude, I want to be you. For real. Even before that, I have to say, going back to 1984, Friday the 13th, when it was released in April, leading up to this, the marketing was pretty awesome. When you see that poster, Brian, it's probably the most iconic image, I feel like, out of the entire franchise, is that knife through the mask and the blood underneath.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just probably one of the best posters of the franchise, and just that image, like, as a kid, that's the one thing that I always thought of when I thought Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th. And God, man, there's such an iconic feeling to this movie all around with the marketing, the look of it and everything. But yes, you're totally right. We're led into the morgue. And of course, as we all know, what we're looking for is the goods. And when Jason gets going, it's amazing. And that's what we're there for. That's what we're sitting down to watch these movies for. And we have one of the best kills. I think one of the best kills in the movie. And that's when Axel gets his throat slit with a fucking hacksaw and his head twisted right off at the same time. It's done with such a visceral nature, and the way that it's edited, it feels like he's really getting his fucking head sawed into and his head being ripped right around.
Absolutely. And then when the nurse gets it, it's pretty sickening how it kind of lingers on her screams. And like when she's being stabbed, she's like, I don't know. There's the camera kind of dwells on her suffering, and it is, it lets you know right away, like, we're not playing around. You know, this is going to be a brutal, mean-spirited ride.
Did you ever think in any way that there was some kind of social commentary interjected in there, that the reason that she gets killed so brutally is because she did not have sex with the male character? She starts to give it up to Axel.
That might be Joseph Zito trying to subvert your expectations, because in
which
many
he does
of
many
other...
times in the movie. He does many times in the movie, so it's entirely possible, right?
Yeah, letting you know right away, like, even the virgin, or, you know, even the people who aren't having sex, or even the virgins can get brutally killed.
But let's face the facts here. She's definitely not a virgin, because as we can see
scene, of course
they've definitely been in that situation before. She's been laid plenty of times next to dead bodies, okay?
All Axel has to say is, shut my mouth, and that seems to get her real horny.
So it makes me believe that Axel himself is not a dead fuck. So
No. Definitely
moving,
not.
Moving forward now, we are introduced to, of course, a brand new group of campers that are headed out to what looks like it would be Crystal Lake. But they're staying at
a
house
Crystal
that
Lake,
they're renting.
Isn't it?
Well, it is Crystal Lake, but they're not like right on the lake. Like, you never see the house right next to the lake. We see lake and creeks and everything else in the film, but like the house isn't like directly on the lake. It's like next to the cabin of the best family of the entire franchise, the Jarvises. Let's bring it up immediately. This is the introduction of Corey Feldman as Tommy Jarvis into the Friday the 13th franchise. And I feel like, you know, I may get some heat for this, but I feel like his inclusion is what makes this film as special as it is in more than one way. I really feel like he brings a very special presence to the film. And he, you know, when he was a young kid, he had that presence. Very talented young boy. And I think he's great. Right off the bat, I think he's definitely like Savini had his way with how he was portrayed. Like, hey, let's make this kid like I was as a kid, except for I had a lot of money and got to make lots of masks and cool monster stuff.
He's even named Tommy.
I know.
Like
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I can imagine for a lot of kids growing up in the 80s that Tommy Jarvis was like the audience surrogate in a way for kids watching the Friday 13th series, because he is kind of like a nerd. He is very much into video games and comic books and monster masks
and things like that.
Yeah,
man. Yeah.
Things that kids growing up in the 80s would love. He is also kind of discovering girls a little bit and liking girls. And there's several moments where he stumbles upon skinny dipping girls or girls changing in the window, the house across from him. And
yeah,
he's trying to sneak a peek.
He sees Samantha flat out, you know, undressing across the way. And that's the one moment when you can tell immediately. There's no mistake about it. These films were being made for teenagers to sneak into. These films were being made for kids to sneak into to see. They're hard R, but they were definitely marketed and made for kids to go in and feel that sense of freedom of being a kid. Like the first time you look at a Playboy or the first time you see a movie like this, a violent movie, an R-rated movie, it's like that eye opener of like, oh my God, I'm free. I can experience this. And that's, I feel like that's what a lot of these movies are. Like, again, and Siskel and Ebert, they bring this up a lot in their reviews of the Friday the 13th series, but you know, they're marketed towards kids. They are. And these are movies that kids snuck into, and it was a blast. And I wish I was one of those kids, man. I totally do. But because thinking about
there's
that,
there's a meta kind of voyeuristic element to Tommy Jarvis's character that I really like. But he's just a charismatic young kid. There's a reason why, you know, Steven Spielberg cast him in The Goonies and
immediately
like that,
after this, too. Immediately after the final chapter.
Yeah, definitely. But then we're also introduced to our batch of teenagers as well.
We have Samantha, played by Judy Aronson, who she pops up in a bunch of random movies after that. She plays in some canon movies as well. We've got Doug. We've got Rob. And, of course, Trish, which is the Jarvis sister. If there was one thing I had to say about the movie in general is that leading up to this movie, I feel like all of the female characters are a lot more interesting and strong and have more of a presence than Trish, but she's still fine in the movie. I think the most notable that everyone talks about, and obviously you guys are listening, not watching us, so you can't see my horrible version of Crispin Glover's dance.
It's the greatest scene in cinematic history.
It's the fucking best thing ever. Like, you can't even, when you see that on screen, that's the beginning of Crispin Glover's career. And when people watch this, they know, well, this guy's just going to do whatever the fuck he wants when he's cast in a movie. And he definitely shows that with that dance. I mean, dude, I don't even know if in the 80s that was considered being like a trendy dancer, what he was attempting to do with that. But it's visually amazing and a stunning sequence. I would watch the movie just for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I relate to his character, Jimmy. He's so desperate to get laid. And then when he finally does get laid, he's anxious about how he did. And that kind of pretty much describes my life. I'm teasing a little bit, but he is, I relate to him because, like, again, he doesn't have a whole lot of self-confidence, but he is the funny guy. He does get the girl. He is much more confident than he gives himself credit for. So I really enjoy his character, and it's pretty devastating when he bites it because he's the character that I want to see make it, you know? But it's a Friday the 13th
movie. Of course.
And
I mean, you do technically, spoiler alert, you do see him make it. You see him make it well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, after the whole dead fuck thing, which, you know, he gets put down. His confidence is put down. He's feeling like shit because he got rid of BJ Betty, which we don't really know the reason why, because he said he treated her right. But, you know, she wouldn't return his calls. Who knows? Maybe he is a dead fuck. But we in the movie, we see him not as being a dead fuck. And one of my favorite characters, the funniest character in the movie, is Ted, played by Lawrence Monison. I feel like the chemistry between him and Jimbo is really what makes that group of teenagers probably the standout, I feel like, for the series up until that point. Because, I mean, I like the kids in part three a lot. I mean, a lot of that is from the character Shelley. But in this one, like, the kids feel a little bit more grounded. I feel like they feel a little bit more real. You know, these are just kids that are going out on the weekend to a house to drink, to party, to dance, and do what kids do. It just feels very relaxed, very realistic, and the chemistry they have together is just fantastic.
Yeah, Teddy's great, although he would not survive the Me Too movement because he gets pretty handsy. He tries to there's one point where he's like trying to kiss one of the twins and it's incredibly awkward to watch. He's like so desperate.
Want
to
kiss some teddy bear? No, I mean, to be fair, Brian, let's make no mistake here. And I'm not trying to be this machismo driven, I'm just saying, you got to put yourself out there here and there. If they didn't want him near him, they could push him away. He is an obnoxious little creep in a way, and they do portray him that way a little bit. But he's also a very likable guy. I mean, you got to love this guy. He just sits there smoking weed and watching old black and white movies.
Pornos, yeah.
Of porn. And it's like, dude, and he's just laughing at everything. He's just hilarious to watch. So,
which he actually was high on set.
Yeah, he was.
During the filming.
Yeah, that's right. He said he was trying to be a method actor. And then once he realized he was actually high and they were trying to do the scene, he immediately regretted it. Which is pretty hilarious, actually.
Because he got super paranoid.
Yeah, of course you're going to get paranoid. Dude, you're on the set of a Friday the 13th and you're smoking weed. I would think you wouldn't want to do that. But of course, young actors try all kinds of things in their performances. But dude, let's just jump right into it, because as we said earlier on, Tom Savini came back to the franchise. He started with Sean Cunningham with the first Friday the 13th. They got him back in for part four. And I feel like that is what makes this movie so special. Now, leading up to this movie, the kill counts in the Friday the 13th franchise, they were relatively low. The first film had like 11, two had 10, three had about 14, I believe. And in the final chapter, it followed suit. It wasn't like it was like the later films where you saw 20 or more kills, but the visceral nature of the kills, the brutality, the mean-spiritedness of those kills is what makes this film stand out. I mean, I feel like every single kill in the movie, for the most part, lands, and they land hard. Like, they feel extremely unnerving. They make you feel uncomfortable, but as a fan of horror, you get excited about them, and there's something to really see on the big screen.
Definitely. Yeah. When I think about the other Friday the 13th movies, the kills are not, I mean, there are some that stand out more than others, but a lot of them aren't particularly memorable. Whereas in this movie, looking back at the film, and I remember a lot of those kills, they're really done with a lot of craft. You have Tom Savini doing the makeup and the special visual effects, which are phenomenal. I mean, and they look, for the most part, pretty real. A lot of them stand out. You get Paul's death. He gets stabbed right in the penis, and you just kind of cringe and you go, "Oh!" Like, and we have to talk about the hitchhiker. Would you care to?
let's just, while we're talking about the kills, because that's what makes this film so special, being a horror fan. Let's just talk about our favorite kills in this movie. The hitchhiker. I call her Fatty Hippie because I don't remember her name. But it's one of the most,
I don't think she has a name,
hilarious,
I think she's
just kills of the entire franchise, or out of any horror film or slasher film ever made, let alone just to this franchise. But you know, the fact that she's looking for a ride, she's like this peace loving hippie, and you know, I just love Ted's line, "Hey honey, you got a sister?" And he's like laughing at her and she's flipping him off. And she gets a blade through the throat as she's eating a fucking banana. Dude, a banana. She's actually like eating the banana. And as she gets the blade through her throat, like, you see her squeezing the banana, and then it literally falls all over itself. And you see like the banana juice on her lips as she's like getting killed. It's
disgusting.
It's so amazing. It's disgusting. It's amazing. It's brutal. It's everything I want out of a movie like this. And it's probably one of the only movies I feel like where it's slightly tongue-in-cheek. You know, it's a little bit campy, but it's because the rest of the movie, make no mistake, I don't think that follows through with the tone of the rest of the movie, but I just think it's funny. Who knows? Maybe Joseph Zito was saying something about hippies and peace-loving people at the time. I don't know, but they killed her off in a brutal fashion. She didn't get a ride. She went nowhere. She got fucking killed, Brian.
That's right. That's right. We have to talk about another great kill in the movie. Poor Jimmy.
Best. I feel like best kill of the whole franchise, if I had to put a number on it.
Where's the corkscrew?
Dude.
Jason has it.
Literally right in the hand. And then we have that reverse shot, which is so well done, of the meat cleaver going into his face and the blood just immediately pouring out. And it's weird watching it later on down the line, because obviously I had seen the Back to the Future films way before I had the chance to see Friday the 13th, the final chapter. So when I watch this, I'm like, oh my God, dude, it's George McFly. And he gets a fucking meat cleaver to the face. It's the most brutal kill, I think, of the entire movie. And it's just the way that it's edited, the effects that Savini did, they're just so perfect.
Another great kill is Teddy, who...
Teddy Bear...
Yeah, he gets knifed through the head through a movie screen, which I mean, I love anything having to do with cinema and old cameras and projectors, and to watch him just like bleed all over the silver screen while this porno movie plays over is kind of right
in your
my...
little computer, Teddy Bear. How's that feel? I find that whole scene pretty funny, because Think of today's society. Think of teenagers today, or, you know, early 20 somethings today. Could you ever imagine them sitting in a room smoking weed and just watching like black and white porno off of a projector? They'd all be looking at their phones. Like, they're actually legitimately enjoying themselves, laughing it up, having a good time, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, there's that. And we haven't even talked about this yet. So we'll move aside the kills for now and talk about what I think, aside from Corey Feldman, is probably the strongest thing in the movie as far as performers is concerned, and that is Ted motherfucking White as Jason Voorhees. Dude, this guy brings such a power to this performance, to this character. He had been a stuntman for many years. He had doubled for John Wayne. He had done so much. He was a seasoned guy. He had no knowledge of the franchise at all whatsoever up until this point. He got offered the job. He took the job. And I feel like, in my opinion, he's probably, if I had to put a number on it, my number two right after Kane Hodder. I don't know how you feel about it, but dude, he runs in this one. He's fast.
Yeah, he's quick.
He's violent.
Yeah.
He's brutal. The one he grabs at these kids, you feel it. Like, he's not, I liked what I had seen of the character up until this point in the series, but when you see Ted White jump into the series in this movie, you're like, that's fucking Jason. This is my Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, he's a stone cold killer, and he's, like I said, he's quick. The scene where he's chasing Tommy and Trish through the house, like, he's booking it. He is like one track mind, get this kid. And I don't know, it brings a whole other level of terror to it, because in a lot of the other Friday the 13th films, Jason walks at a pretty leisurely pace. But in this, I mean, it's just unbelievable how he moves behind the scenes. I mean, Ted White really did want to get little Corey Feldman, because apparently little Corey Feldman was being a bit of a brat on set, and Ted White did not take to that at all. So in scenes where Jason Voorhees is supposed to be chasing after Tommy Jarvis, Ted White really did want to get Corey Feldman.
Yeah, he definitely did. I mean, the one scene that you see that the most, and that Corey Feldman has got on record and said he was legitimately frightened by it, is when Jason comes through the window in the front of the cabin and grabs him. I mean,
I'd be terrified by that
in general. But then knowing that, like, you know, this guy's he said he wanted to give him a spanking, like, for real.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
Corey Feldman is a young up and coming actor. He's a child actor. He's trying to be the cool kid on set with all these teenage actors, or I should say, actually, they're not teenage. They're all in their fucking early 20s at this point. But you know what I'm saying? So, and Ted White stayed away from all of them. I don't know if you're aware of that or not, Brian, but he kept to himself. He just stayed in his own chair. He wanted to stay away from the kids as much as possible to give that mystique to Jason. So that way, when they saw him, they actually felt that fear. And that scene for me, when you look at Corey Feldman's face, dude, you can tell that he's legitimately frightened by that. I mean, it's amazing. And I think, like, you know, giving this back to, or taking his back to Ted White, his height, his size, he's not like giant, like, you know, Tyler Mane is and Rob Zombie's Halloween movies, but he's just tall enough. He just got that reach. He's the perfect size for Jason in this movie.
Definitely. He definitely has that physicality down. I will say, I mean, Kane Hodder to me has a little bit more personality. He brings character to even the most terrible of the Friday the 13th franchise.
To be fair, he's in some of the worst of them. I mean, he's the best Jason,
right,
but he's in some of the worst of them, unfortunately.
That's right. So, Ted White, I agree, takes a close second for me in terms of portrayals.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I mean, it's widely known for most fans of the series. I mean, it's kind of hard to pick your favorite, but for me, when you watch this movie, there's no other Jason like him, just like there's no other Jason like Kane's when he steps into the role. So that's what makes this movie so special. I mean, I feel like Zito knows how to direct a slasher. You know, he did The Prowler, which I really like The Prowler as well. It's brutal. Savini did the effects for that as well. So jumping into this series was not something new to him. He knew what he was doing behind the camera, even if he had to cut corners and put his actors or actresses through hell to get them to do what he wanted them to do. I mean, they were not shooting this in the summertime. They were shooting this when it was fucking cold out, and we're seeing characters like Samantha being put in a raft in the freezing cold water and
naked.
Yeah, naked. Exactly. And she's freezing and they're out there for hours trying to get this shot. You know, he did what he had to do. I mean, these are low budget pictures. They had to stay on time. They had to stay on budget. So the dude, you know, he's hammering down on his actors to get them to do what they need to do. And I feel like, you know, regardless if he was a fucking dick on set or not, the film turned out great. I mean, I feel like the direction is very precise. Out of the whole series, I feel like it's one of the best directed movies of the entire series.
Definitely. There's a certain aura of class to the proceedings. I mean, it's it's still an exploitation picture, for sure. But the way Joseph Zito frames the shots, the way he extends scenes for suspense, I'm reminded of, again, it's at the very beginning. Once all of the ambulances and the helicopters clear out of the barn at the very beginning of the film, there's a moment where the camera just lingers on the camp and the barn, and it's just an extended little moment of silence, just pure silence. And you're on the edge of your seat because you don't know, why would you linger on that shot? And I think it's just like that moment of stillness and anticipation is what elevates this film to me. You look at a lot of horror films now, it's like they are overly reliant on jump scares, and there are a few jumps in this movie as well, but again, it's allowing that time to really breathe and anticipate, and then when the jumps come, when the kills come, they really hit you.
They hit you hard, dude. They hit you in the hardest way possible. I feel like out of any franchise that's out there of slashers, Friday the 13th has always had the biggest balls. And this movie has, I feel like, the biggest balls of the entire series. I mean, some fans may disagree with me, but Savini, Zito, White, dude, it's like the dream team. And it's unfortunate, I feel like, that after this movie, because they obviously set up the ending to follow into something different. We might as well get to the ending. So if you haven't seen the final chapter, I feel fucking bad for you, but go watch it now, finish the episode after, because we're going to totally just unleash everything on you. The ending sets up something really interesting. I don't know how far they went into development with the sequel with that, what Joseph set it up as. But we see Tommy Jarvis actually kill Jason Voorhees. He kills him with a fucking machete. How he does it is he sees an article in the paper, which I always found interesting, because you see an article in the paper, which actually shows an image, like an artist drawing of Jason, you know, what they think he looks like. And I'm like, how did they ever get a good look at him? How do they know he looks like that?
I don't know. But that whole thing never really made sense to me, but whatever.
But no, so he sees what Jason looks like. So he shaves his head. They put Corey Feldman with a bald cap on him. And he makes himself look like Jason to catch Jason's attention, much like how Ginny pretends that she's Pamela Voorhees at the end of part two to get his attention. You know, we know that he's not intelligent in that way. He's like, you know, a fucking a tiger with a pea brain that's out there to kill everything. And so he gets his attention, and that's how he gets a machete to the face to Jason Voorhees. And it gives us the most iconic shot of the entire film.
Yeah, so Jason is stabbed in the face with the machete, which when Jason falls over, the machete goes into, like, goes deeper and deeper into his head. He kind of slides
down the machete.
Amazing effects.
Amazing.
Brilliant
animatronic
effects.
Yeah. They blend the makeup with the animatronic perfectly. And the way the eye twitches and moves around as it's going down.
The eye twitches, and also as he slides further down the blade, his brow kind of like winces almost. It's so well done.
You could argue
that it doesn't really hold up because effects have advanced so much. But to me, I mean, you're seeing real practical effects on screen. That to me is going to look way more real than anything else.
With the budget they had for this, you really see they pulled out all the stops and literally used everything they had available to them to make it look good. And for me, it's such an iconic shot and iconic image of the whole series. When I think of Friday the 13th, that's one thing I just always remember: the machete flipping up the mask and you see Jason's face. And then, which again, I feel like is also probably one of my favorite interpretations of, you know, the unmasked Jason ever, because he looks fucking disgusting. He's creepy as shit.
Because isn't he unmasked in pretty much every movie?
No, he's not, Brian.
He's unmasked in part 7.
We know that you're kind of a noob here. Should I bring out the computer again?
What's it say?
It says we know you're a dead fuck already. So that much has already been established.
Oh.
He's a noob.
But, I mean, again, the unmasking is extremely well done and terrifying.
So it sets the movie up where you possibly think, I mean, I don't know how you felt about it when you watched it. Did you honestly think that Tommy Jarvis was going to be the killer in the next film?
No, because Jason's on the cover, and I figured Jason would come back at some in some fashion, although he kind of doesn't. As we've talked about in the past with part five, Jason's not the killer, but at any rate, they had a chance to do something really interesting where Tommy Jarvis kind of takes up the mantle and becomes the slasher of the franchise if it were to continue. The same thing I feel about Halloween 4 going into Halloween 5.
I knew you were going to bring it up. Well, it's an obvious comparison, so of course, rightly so.
Yeah. Like, why set that up if you're not going to follow through on it? That's where I feel like part 5 doesn't really have the conviction of going along with what was set up in part 4. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree.
So you get this shot of Tommy Jarvis looking into the camera, and it's this haunted expression. It's this menacing expression. You're not really sure what to make of it. And it kind of leaves you unsettled as you leave the theater, because it is an uplifting ending of sorts with Jason being dead and the brother and sister reunite. And then he just gives this look to the camera directly at you, and it kind of jolts you a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, the entire franchise up until that point is always giving you that last scare. And that was the trend at the time. Ever since Carrie came out, they always wanted to give you that last little jolt. And I feel like that was their way of doing it more subtle fashion. You know, just have him look at the camera and give the audience that, well, what is he going to be the killer? What's that look for? Is he possibly possessed by the evil of Jason Voorhees? Which, well, we see that later on the franchise, way later, that kind of thing happens. But I do agree that it's interesting. They totally didn't do anything with it at all in part 5. I don't know if the reasoning is as they've stated in Crystal Lake Memories or any of the documentaries. I have no clue if it had to do with the fact that Feldman he got cast in Goonies. He couldn't come back for it, so he only did the cameo in his backyard. I don't know.
Yeah, that's another disappointment that part 5 didn't have Corey Feldman playing Tommy Jarvis the whole way through. Although we do get the extremely handsome dude playing Tommy Jarvis.
I don't know his name. You like that guy.
He's handsome. I mean,
he's
what
very,
can I say?
He's jacked. He's good looking. But I mean, we can't really fault Feldman, because without Feldman, there'd be no Goonies. So I'm like, fine, go.
I would be interested. I would be interested in seeing a Halloween 2018 style, like soft reboot, basically, or like a sequel to part 4.
You know that Feldman's he's championed that idea for a while. He wanted to do like a final chapter 2.0, you know, F2.0 type thing, where it's like 20 years later and it's like Tommy Jarvis, him back in the role.
I'd pay to see that. I'm sure a lot of horror fans would pay to see
that. I feel like personally that the Tommy Jarvis character is as important to the Friday the 13th series as Laurie Strode is to the Halloween series. I mean, it's just an important character. This is where the movies get special. Like, it's an actual character. It's not just kids getting bumped off, which we all love to see. We all enjoy. But he adds something special to it. He's a real kid. And we actually see
I love to see children in danger, horrible danger.
That's your thing, and you finally get to see one, a real child. He's a child, and there's the scene when they're in his bedroom, and Jason's trying to break through. Like, it's very suspenseful. Like, he could possibly get slaughtered. So, yes, that's your favorite thing. We all know that you like seeing children either murdered on screen or in danger or possibly murdered. Or this is common fact in the podcasting world. The God of Podcasting likes to see kids brutally slaughtered. I mean, what can I say?
What can I say? Alas, you know, hopefully whatever lies in the future of the Friday the 13th franchise, maybe one day they'll bring Corey Feldman back.
I mean, hey, honestly, Platinum Dooms came out and said something recently, like they talked about it on Shockwave's podcast for Blumhouse. You know, they want to make one once this whole
legal issue
goes and gets resolved, then we can hope for another Friday the 13th movie. But I doubt we'll ever see. I mean, realistically, we'll never see Tommy Jarvis again, I don't think. Yeah. At least not Feldman's version. But it'd be cool to see him come back. I mean, if anything, we're probably going to get a soft reboot or a sequel to the last one or whatever. But I love Jason. As you cannot see to our listeners, tattooed right on the back of my arm. I know I'm not the minority with that. I know it's a very popular tattoo. But I mean, this series has always been very special to me, very near and dear to my heart. And this movie is probably the most special. When I want to watch one of these movies, it's usually this, Jason Lives, maybe part 3. It's very special. I think it's the best of the series.
Yeah, if you were to, if there's any of you out there listening who have not seen any of the Friday the 13th movies, if you were to watch just one, I would recommend The Final Chapter. It embodies all of the elements you would come to expect in a Friday the 13th movie, a slasher movie in general, and horror movies in general. There's great suspense, amazing kills and gore and makeup effects, characters that you like and you relate to, and a little bit of heart. You know,
just a little, a tiny, yeah. Eensy beansy, little, tiny little, I mean,
little bit
a
of
smidgen.
Heart. It's for the most part, it's very mean spirited and it's very brutal. But there's something about this film that warms my heart in a way that the others don't. Maybe because it's just so good and so well put together.
It's comforting, too. It really is for me. And I don't know if I just have a sick fucking mind. And that's just that's the way that I am. I enjoy watching people getting butchered in brutal, you know, creative ways. But I can fall asleep to this movie. If I'm in a bad mood, I'm sad, I'm depressed, or I'm excited, or I'm happy, whatever emotion I'm going through, whatever I'm dealing with in life, I can put this movie in and it entertains me. It makes me happy. It makes me feel comfortable. I could fall asleep holding a stuffed animal in my arms, stuffed animal, Jason Voorhees. And cuddle it as I'm sleeping.
Sure. I think most horror fans would
of course,
would understand
that. We're preaching to the choir, man.
Yeah. But Roger Ebert called this movie an immoral and reprehensible piece of trash. Au contraire, Mr. Ebert, I think The Final Chapter is one of the classiest and most brutal and most entertaining slasher flicks ever made.
It gives us the goods. It knows what we want. It delivers it on every level. So, Loisos, there it is. We gushed about this movie for way too long. You're still a dead fuck. I'm sorry. I can't do anything about that. I can't fix you. Remember, I did not say it. The computer did. So, if you have a qualm, you have a problem, talk to the computer. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen. You asked for it. You wanted it. You got it. You wanted the best. You got the best. Friday the 13th, part 4, The Final Chapter. After this, we'll see what you guys pick next. I don't know, for the next Friday the 13th. But as we said earlier on in the show, if you're listening to this and you live in the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, 10 p.m., Friday the 13th, July. That's what's up. Jason Lives. Tom McLaughlin's awesome Friday the 13th film. Come on out and watch it. Hang out with us. Drink beer. See kids get brutally slaughtered.
Yay!
And sing some Alice Cooper along with us. We're going to be chanting Man Behind the Mask. That's a thing we love to do on the Epic Film Guys podcast. But I hate rating movies when we gush about them. But Brian, I'm going to make you do it anyways.
Oh, all right. Can I give it a 9.5
out
of 10?
We don't do any of that shit. We just fucking bump it up or not. We don't do that half shit on this show.
Fine. Well, if you look at it from the context of a slasher film and a horror film, this is one of my favorites ever. So I have to go ahead and give Friday the 13th part 4, The Final Chapter, a 10 out of 10.
You're giving it a perfect rating. Ladies and gentlemen, a perfect rating from the God of Podcasting for Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter. That's rare. It's rare that you give a film a perfect rating. I can't believe it.
I've done it a couple other times before.
For me, I'm very close to that. As I said earlier on in the show, there's so much you could say about this movie, but the only issue I do have with it, and it goes back to one of the characters, leading up to this, we have amazing, strong female characters. And I feel like Trish, while serviceable and she's fine in the movie, Kimberly Beck lacks a certain presence. She lacks a certain something. She's not special. You know, I feel like out of all the leading ladies of the prior three movies, she's probably the weakest. I think she's fine in the movie. I like her, but she's not strong enough for me. So that's the only downfall of this movie for me. It's still getting a 9 out of fucking 10 because I love this movie. It is my favorite of the franchise, and it's in my top 5 slashers of all time. So still a near perfect horror film for me. I go back to it whenever I get the chance to, and we just showed it at Alamo Drafthouse.
If it's one of your favorites, how are you not going to give it a 10 out of 10?
I can't. That's the only thing. That's the only thing.
I mean, there are things that I could pick apart about this movie too, but
hey, this is all based on the film as part of a whole of the series itself. And that's why it's getting a 9 out of 10. That's near perfect, man. I haven't given a movie a perfect rating in a while, except for the times that I'm really hammered on the show and I don't really know what I'm doing. And I'm just like,
I think I'm just too lenient. Maybe that's it.
You're not too lenient.
That's true. I did give The Incredibles 2 a 5 out of 10.
I don't think anyone listening to this episode cares at all about The Incredibles 2, Brian. They're here for the goods, blood, guts, gore, and fucking chicks naked about to fuck
boobs.
Dudes next to dead bodies. Then they get killed.
Mm.
But that's it, ladies and gentlemen.
My idea of a good time.
Oh, yeah. You're still a dead fuck, though. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. Make sure to check out our main show. Of course, if you're listening to this, you already know about the main show, but every single Thursday at epicfilmguys.com. If you're not following us on social media, at epicfilmguys on Instagram, at Twitter, and, of course, our Facebook page. And if you're already following us on Facebook, be sure to check out our fan group, the Hobster's Dumpster. That's where you can hang out with the Epic Film Guys, talk about movies and our current episodes. And of course, we have merchandise, redbubble.com/epicfilmguys. We have it all, ladies and gentlemen. We just want to appreciate you. We thank you for voting on this, and we thank you for listening. For myself, for Loy Sauce, and all you sadistic motherfuckers out there listening that also enjoy watching people get brutally slaughtered on a weekly basis, I'm Epic Film Guy Justin.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Brian.
And we will
see you at the movies.